And we're back here on In Focus, News Radio KMAN. Manhattan City Manager Ron Fier and Manhattan Assistant Fire Chief Brad Clausen in studio with me. We've sort of been running down the tomorrow's Manhattan City Commission meeting. That's 7 p.m. in the Manhattan City Hall, City Commission Chambers. I almost said today again. I almost did it. But I think we're going to move along until the general agenda here. And there's four different items on it, unless I'm reading incorrectly. But I see four different items in an executive session. But we'll just sort of run down the list from top to bottom. And it seems like the item of most I will garner a lot of discussions, the last one, and maybe best for last, or depends on your philosophy there, I suppose.
Sure, thanks. Thanks, Nick. The first item on the general agenda is a request for a zoning amendment. This is out on McCall Road. It's an amendment to a current plan unit development to allow for a Scooter's Coffee drive-through kiosk. It's a fairly small building. It's there between Arby's and Dunkin' Donuts. And so this was at the planning board initially for and was tabled there last month. And there was some concern by some of the neighboring properties that it should the setback should be more in line and some provisions to take care of some potential traffic congestion there. And so the requester made some adjustments to that and went back to the planning board and got a unanimous recommendation to move forward. So again, it's a very small type of coffee drive-through kiosk. It's a single drive lane through with about six vehicles that can stack up there at any one time, and so we're recommending approval on that particular one.
What are some of the considerations you take into account in regards to drive-thrus that are different than maybe other businesses?
So this one's, obviously this one's just the coffee or drinks, and so it's something that moves fairly fast. Usually isn't a huge stack up for that sort of thing like there would be for food at certain times of the day. So really looking that there's adequate space for those vehicles to stack up and not interfere with regular traffic flow on the adjacent public streets. And in this case, there's some frontage roads or backage roads, if you will, in that particular area. So there was concern mentioned through the public hearing process, obviously, for this amendment. That's the reason we have those. And so developer made some good adjustments to make sure that tried to minimize any impacts that there might be.
And are there any special code considerations, Brad, regarding drive-thrus that are different?
No, not really. I mean, it'll still go through our standard plan review and construction inspection and permitting process. So it'll be constructed just like any other commercial building would, even though they wouldn't have public access inside the building. It doesn't sound like, you know, there'll still be employees working there. So it's still an occupied structure in our mind, and we'll follow all the same codes.
And there's also a first reading of an ordinance regarding large vehicle parking on public streets in residential areas. Ron, tell me a little bit about that one.
This was one we've continually gotten concerns by the public on. It's really targeted fairly large vehicles that have a tendency to stay in the residential neighborhoods, is where this is applicability is. Recreational vehicles, so instead of that person maybe finding a storage place to park that, they're using the public street to park it. And the concern there in the residential areas, especially some of them where there may not be public sidewalks, there's poor lighting, so you got a lot of kids playing in the neighborhood. So visibility, being able to see kids playing or on bicycles, it's just a big item out there that causes some safety concerns. And so that's the primary reason for this moving forward. Could be semi-trucks, usually they don't store those there, so it's about situations where you've got larger vehicles that where they're looking at using that public street for storage. They certainly can still use their driveway to do that, and there's some other provisions. This would affect vehicles that are larger than 22 feet in length, 8 foot wide and 8 foot high. And so again, this is a provision. It's a proposed first read of an ordinance that would regulate that, again, specific to residential area. There are a couple of times where it would just be on the overnight hours. So it would be effective from a half hour after sunset to a half hour before sunrise. And so For part of the day, they could certainly do that. You know, if they're first unloading of a vehicle like that, they can do that as long as there's somebody there that's supervising that vehicle and helping to direct traffic and just making folks aware of it. There's also a permit process for you can get what's being proposed, two temporary permits for five consecutive days a year by permit, twice a year. That thought there is that you may have grandparents visiting that are traveling across country in an RV, and so they can sit there for a little bit if you have that aspect to things. So that's really the nature of the request and why it was coming forward.
You said RVs, trucks, and I imagine maybe buses would fall under that,
yep,
too.
They would, yep.
Okay. And I can imagine some of those streets out there could get a little tight with those types of vehicles on that. Do you think that might clear things up at all for fire trucks, Brad?
Yeah, it certainly would help. You know, we always have to be aware of access to all parts of town at all times. So anything we can do to help that scenario is definitely a benefit.
Okay, and moving on to item C for the general agenda, unless there's something else you wanted to add on that real quick. All right, consider first reading of ordinances adopting the 2018 international codes and 2017 national electrical code, and as well as updates to licensing and demolition ordinances. And definitely have the right person in the room to talk about this, too.
That's why I brought him along.
Yeah, thanks. Well, you know, this we do this every 3 years. The codes update on a national basis and on an international basis, actually, every 3 years. And so we have been very consistent over the years in making sure we stay up to date with that. In fact, we have adopted a new set of codes, every 3 years since 1967, with the exception of one time in 1976, and I'm not sure what happened. That was a little bit before me back then, but the point is we've been very consistent with this. This will be my 10th time through this process. I think we've gotten it refined and the process down to a pretty good deal now, where we meet with all the stakeholders groups. We started this back in 2018, early year 2018, going through all the different code changes and determining what those were. We met with the Flint Hills Area Builders Association, with the Architects Association, all of our licensed contractors, the Landlords Association, and made sure everybody knew what the changes were that were being proposed and gave them an opportunity for input. And I really appreciate all of those groups. You know, that's a lot of time they spend on their part to help us through this process, and it's been really nice. You know, we've gotten written letters of support from the Builders Association, the Architects Association, on the new codes. So it's gone, in my mind, it's gone really well this time. Some of the reasons we update these codes, you know, right now we were talking about flooding, and, you know, when you talk about things like tornadoes, high wind events, you know, what the caller indicated earlier, you know, about the roof tie downs, well, there's always new products coming out that the code incorporates. There's now a new product, for instance, that you can use. It's a long screw that goes up through your wall top plate and it ties your roof down. You can't see it. So if you really looked at it, you wouldn't even know that roof was tied down. But, you know, the code continually updates with things that are learned from those disaster events, new materials. You know, a big trend these days, and it's new in the code this time, there's an appendix chapter on tiny homes. And so, you know, that's become kind of a big trend nationally. So we now, assuming the codes get adopted, we'll have a way to regulate and construct permanent tiny homes. Now, I'm not talking about tiny homes on wheels, but, site built on a foundation, just tiny houses under 400 square feet, which is pretty small. So, again, I think it's gone well. I look forward to presenting the info to the commission here and answering any questions and hearing comments.
And I do see that the Code Appeals Board and Housing Appeal Board both recommend approval.
That's true. And so the Code Appeals Board is a board that oversees appeals to all of our construction codes. And they're, by ordinance, they're required to forward a recommendation to the City Commission on any changes to those construction codes. And we spent about a half a day going over all the changes with them, and they voted unanimously to recommend approval of those codes, as did the Housing Appeals Board, which regulates our property maintenance code.
Now, you mentioned tiny homes. I know we don't have very many of those in the community yet, or really any that I've seen around.
Yeah, we don't really have any that would qualify under the definition that's in the code. We have some small houses, but tiny homes in the 2018 code is anything under 400 square feet on a foundation. It's, again, it's permanent structure, generally site-built. And, this, again, would give us a way to be able to allow some of those types of things. And hopefully, I know we've had some folks in the community starting to investigate maybe some tiny home villages. I think part of our UDO process, our Unified Development Ordinance that is currently being reviewed right now, makes some allowance for tiny home villages in the zoning ordinance that's being proposed. So I think that in conjunction with this code change, we may start to see some of that type of thing down the road.
Do you have a date you anticipate that UDO being approved or at least coming out for a discussion?
I think there'll be some segments that come along the way as they finish different chapters of it, but I think we're shooting for towards the fall of this year to have most of it pretty well in draft form, ready for final review. I would just applaud the work that Brad and his team does in engaging the building community and the stakeholders relative to this. One of the things that's somewhat unique in this is it does allow for some local variances, if you will. So if everybody's in agreement that, maybe we're not ready to adopt this aspect of the code, we can agree to a later date or reassess it later. And so I know we've got that situation. There's a requirement for, I think, some fire sprinkler applications for some existing units that may be, I don't think it affects a lot of our properties, maybe just a handful, but it could be a costly renovation for them. And so I think we've put a recommendation that we give them maybe 5 years to come into compliance with that. You might want to speak
sure.
to that, Brad.
Yeah. As Ron said, there's a retroactive requirement for some fire sprinklers in certain assembly occupancies that serve alcohol. And while the codes, the construction codes, generally are not retroactive, this is one instance where the fire code that's being proposed does have a retroactive requirement in it for that. But understanding that that's a pretty big deal for some business owners, and so and very costly. So we've put a effective date of January 1 of 2025 in the proposed ordinance for compliance with that. The whole code package actually has an effective date of January 1, 2020. So if they're adopted here in June, it'll be January 1st before they actually go into effect. And that's something we started a couple of code cycles ago just to give the building community and the design community some additional time to kind of get used to what the changes are and to be able to plan, especially with the architects, to be able to work that into their plans that they're creating for future projects.
And we'll be hearing a lot more about this at the meeting tomorrow night, 7 p.m. And you can also view that on cityofmhk.com/TV or on Cox Cable Channel 3. And probably going to be on Facebook as well. And I'm pretty sure we'll share that too. And unfortunately, we got to get off to our next break. It's just flying by. We'll get back. We'll finish up the general agenda in our next segment. News Radio KMAN, you're listening to In Focus.
The KMAN Morning Show is brought to you by M&S Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. M&S takes care of residential and commercial customers, and they provide prompt quality service to Manhattan and the surrounding area.
This is Jordy Nelson, retired All-Pro wide receiver and proud native of Leonardville, Kansas. For the last 10 summers, it's been a privilege for my family and me to host a Nelson's Landing benefit and auction, where we help out area residents in their time of need. This year, the recipients we have chosen are Gene Kunze Peterson and Rosalyn Hart. The 11th annual Nelson's Landing benefit kicks off on Friday, June 7th, with an autograph session with me beginning at 6 p.m. at Nelson's Landing. The event continues on Saturday with a drive-in ride starting at Nelson's Landing at 11 a.m. with stops in Clay Center, Binning, Lynn, and Waterville. The benefit will conclude at Nelson's Landing with a silent auction from 4 to 6:30 and a live auction at 7. A sampling of auction items this year include items from Kent State, Green Bay Packers, and Kansas City Chiefs.
In addition, there will be Harley Davidson and other outdoor items, gift baskets, and of course, those delicious homemade pies Nelson's Landing is famous for. To read Gene and Rose's stories and to see a full schedule of events, visit nelsonslandingks.com. It's the 11th annual Nelson's Landing Benefit, June 7th and 8th in Leonardville.
Blueville Nursery's Horticulture Hints radio show will guide you through a spring full of gardening and landscape projects. Tune in each Friday morning at 10 a.m. as we discuss timely garden topics, tips and tricks, and announce upcoming seminars and events hosted at our garden store. We